What happens when the unwritten rules that hold a society together begin to unravel? Picture the small American town where nobody locked their doors at night, not out of naivety, but because trust was woven into the fabric of daily life. That world feels increasingly distant. Over the past 5 decades, something fundamental has shifted in how Americans relate to one another and to the institutions that govern our lives. The common good, that invisible web of mutual obligation and shared values, has been systematically exploited by those with the power to do so. This isn't just about politics or economics. It's about the erosion of trust itself. When Martin Shkreli raised the price of a life-saving drug by 5,000%, defending his actions with, "This is a capitalist society," he wasn't just being ruthless. He was revealing how far we've drifted from the understanding that we're bound together in something larger than individual gain. The real danger isn't one person's greed. It's that exploitation breeds more exploitation. Like the first thief in that unlocked door town, early violators of social norms gain tremendous advantage. But once trust breaks, everyone else must adopt costly defensive measures, and the entire system degrades. We're now living in the aftermath of that degradation, and the question facing us is stark. Can we rebuild what's been lost? Politics wasn't always scorched earth. Opponents once disagreed fiercely, yet shared meals and respected institutional norms. Watergate shattered that equilibrium. Nixon authorized break-ins, weaponized the IRS, and paid hush money, introducing a new calculus: winning at any cost. His resignation became a blueprint rather than a cautionary tale. The 1987 battle over Supreme Court nominee Robert Bork escalated partisan warfare. Liberal groups deployed apocalyptic mass mailings, creating the verb "to Bork." They defeated his nomination, but legitimized tactics soon weaponized against them. Newt Gingrich's 1995 House takeover transformed Washington into a war zone, complete with government shutdowns and Clinton's impeachment. Democrats passed the Affordable Care Act without Republican votes. Republicans obstructed Obama's agenda wholesale. Obama circumvented Congress through executive orders. This vicious cycle undermined separation of powers, creating wild policy swings with each administration change. What's most troubling isn't the conflict itself. It's how completely it has normalized behavior previous generations would have found unthinkable. When winning becomes the only value, institutions protecting democracy become acceptable casualties. Post-war corporate leaders balanced shareholders, workers, communities, and the nation, a stakeholder capitalism fueling middle-class expansion. The 1980s shattered this. Michael Milken pioneered hostile takeovers using junk bonds, targeting companies to boost returns by crushing unions and relocating factories. Jack Welch epitomized this at GE, cutting 100,000 jobs in 4 years while earning the nickname "Neutron Jack." He forced managers to fire their bottom 10% annually, creating perpetual anxiety. GE halved its American workforce while nearly doubling overseas employment. By 2017, CEO pay reached almost 300 times typical worker wages. This wasn't just business transformation, it was moral transformation. Gains flowed upward, leaving Americans with flat wages and hollowed-out communities. The profit maximization mentality infected healthcare, which became for-profit, and investment banks, which transformed into megabanks, where shareholders absorbed losses while bankers collected bonuses from reckless bets, culminating in the 2008 crash. When whatever it takes politics merged with whatever it takes profit making, corporate money flooded politics to rig economic rules favoring the wealthy. By 2016, corporations and Wall Street contributed $34 for every $1 from labor unions and public interest groups. The wealthiest 0.01% increased their share of federal election contributions from 10% in 1980 to 40% by 2012. Democrats became dependent on corporate money. Many voted against healthcare reform because sponsors opposed it. Wall Street's contributions led to the repeal of banking regulations, enabling the 2008 financial crisis. research concluded that the preferences of the average American appear to have only a minuscule, near zero, statistically non-significant impact upon public policy. The consequences have been catastrophic. By 2016, the typical American household had 14% lower net worth than in 1984, while the richest 0.1% owned nearly as much wealth as the bottom 90%. Life expectancy gaps between rich and poor are widening, with rising death rates among less educated Americans due to suicides, liver disease, and drug overdoses. When the game appears rigged, anger attaches to convenient scapegoats, inviting demagogues to sow division. Real leadership means serving as a trustee of the common good, a steward of society's unwritten rules. Political victories that erode trust aren't victories, but net losses. Corporate profits gained by undermining public trust aren't successes, but betrayals. When Al Gore conceded to George W. Bush in 2000, despite a contested election, he prioritized institutional stability over personal ambition, demonstrating that something larger than winning exists. Corporate leadership must also embrace trusteeship. When Market Basket CEO Arthur T. Demoulas was fired for prioritizing employees and customers over shareholders, boycotts forced the board to sell back to him. His stakeholder-focused approach enhanced business success while maintaining trust. Companies like Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's have organized as benefit corporations that legally consider workers, community, and environment alongside shareholders, and they're thriving. In the 1940s, 1960s, business leaders viewed themselves as corporate statesmen advocating for job expansion and environmental protections. Today's executives could champion campaign finance reform to unrig the system. True leadership is defined not by personal ambition, but by morality and service, the practical foundation for a functioning society. Democracy requires shared truth, yet public trust in media plummeted from 72% in 1972 to 18% by 2016. Profit-driven corporations prioritize ratings over civic duty, while social media algorithms trap us in bubbles, amplifying sensational content over facts. Breaking free demands consuming diverse news sources, fact-checking before sharing, and engaging respectfully across viewpoints. We must demand transparency legislation, digital literacy education, and sustainable journalism models. Jefferson understood a free press as essential for truth. Without shared reality, we cannot solve common problems or resist demagogues who exploit division. Restoring truth as our foundation isn't optional. Restoring the common good requires recommitting to civic education and public service. Our children must understand themselves as citizens responsible for upholding shared values, not just individuals pursuing careers. Yet civic education has vanished from schools, replaced by standardized tests and job preparation. As Jefferson warned, ignorance and despotism seem made for each other. Civic education demands more than classroom learning. Young people must develop what Tocqueville called habits of the heart through community service, working in homeless shelters, tutoring, mentoring, helping the elderly. They need to move beyond their bubbles to engage with different people and perspectives. Consider requiring 2 years of public service, military, Peace Corps, Teach for America, or similar programs. This shared experience would instill obligation to society while connecting Americans across social divides. America's national identity isn't about race or ethnicity, it's about shared ideals and common good. Though our era shows greed and division, restoration is possible. Daily, ordinary Americans demonstrate compassion that rarely makes headlines. Our challenge is transforming this into public-spiritedness reaching society's highest levels. Nothing worth doing can be achieved in one lifetime. That's precisely why we must begin now.